All right, 2021, where were we? Oh, okay. Somebody read that.
An inheritance gained hastily in the beginning will not be blessed in the end.
All right, pretty simple. An inheritance gained hurriedly in the beginning will not be blessed in the end. We're obviously talking about giving things to your kids, an inheritance. What do you call that when a parent gives a kid something that they did not earn? What are we talking about?
Spoiling,
right? This is spoiling a kid. Now, why would a parent, why would a mom or a dad spoil a kid?
Bad parenting.
Well, yeah, it's bad parenting, but it's out of love, right? They don't do it on purpose. They're not intentionally trying to screw up their kids. They just do. So, right? It's not your fault. You're just stupid, right?
No.
Yeah. There's a logical explanation to that. But the idea is, you know, as we've studied battles and looked at that, when we went into the land, and not we, but when we watched Joshua and them going to the land, we weren't there, kind of, just there, we were witnesses. You saw the victories, and what they took from that was the spoil, and the spoil was a result of hard work and labor and victories in battle, and then you took the spoil. Well, what happens when you take that spoil and you pass it on to another who has not done the work, doesn't understand the value of what it took to get that, and obviously in our context that's not battle, but it's work and effort and sweat and whatever and stress and all that comes with it, and you give it to a kid who hasn't earned it, hasn't gone through the difficulty. Well, they end up spoiled, okay? Something I think to remember, God is a good parent. God does not spoil his kids. And though this is a lesson that we would all nod our heads as individuals and go, that makes sense, what's the missing ingredient here? Why is someone spoiled? What did they fail? What step is missing? Discipline. What else? What did the parent fail to allow their kid to go through?
Hardship.
Difficulty. So is that ingrained in the process of being a loving parent? Yes. To remove that is to remove all the perspective of what does it take to earn that thing, right? Whether it's a new car or a new bicycle or whatever, right? An Xbox, and whatever it took to get to that place, if you've removed that, then the perspective is lost with that, okay? God is a good parent, and as a result of that, allows us to go through difficulty. Not because he's like, you know what, I don't so much like Ben today. I'm going to let him just struggle, right? That's not the case. It's because he loves us and cares about us. Okay, you guys have heard that story probably on some cheesy, like, Kitchen Soup for the Soul book, whatever that thing's called. Of the butterfly trying to get out of the cocoon, right? And part of the process for it getting out is to struggle to get out of the cocoon that it made as a caterpillar, right? Well, there's a story of a person that saw this, immediately thought, oh gosh, that's awful, I'm going to help this butterfly out, pulls it out, and then allows it to sit there, and then a minute later, it gets eaten by a bird because it can't fly. He was telling a buddy about the story, and his buddy says, yeah, well, part of the process of getting all the gunk off of the butterfly is for it to struggle to get all that out. And as it's coming out of the cocoon, all the mucus on its wings and whatever comes off, which allows it to fly. And you took away the struggle, hence you took away its ability to be a functioning member of a butterfly society, right? And it hence is dead, right? So you handicapped it. You retarded its growth because you didn't allow it to go through struggle, okay? So as you guys think through parenting, as you think through your own lives, as you think through God and what he's doing and has done in your life, remember that. Struggle is good. Struggle is healthy. Struggle is where we gain perspective and value and appreciation for the things in our life, right? And as you look back and you've heard it from your parents, they've said, man, I don't wish those times of my life on my worst enemy. They were hard, but I would not trade them for anything, right? That's how we all view difficulty in our life. It was a great season in terms of what I learned. God, I hope I don't have to go back through that again because it was awful. However, I could not have learned what I learned in another season of life, okay? So as you think through parenting, let your kids struggle. One day you guys are going to have the opportunity. You're going to love them and you're going to want to dote on them, but it's good to allow them to struggle. And if you guys have ever been around kids that are spoiled, not just monetarily and stuff like that, but there's just they've never been allowed to fail. They've never been allowed to, there's always been a huge safety net. You raise unhealthy kids that don't know what it means to risk or to step out there and to have a sense of fear and like, oh my gosh, and the excitement and all that comes with that, okay? So, you know, there's appropriate times to have nets for kids and to make sure that they don't have to experience the full consequences sometimes of their actions, but it's sometimes good to help them understand that there's a perspective there that comes only when struggle is a part of that, all right? Thoughts on that? Any of you spoiled kids?
I got to be realistic, I know, but I see spoiled kids.
I bet you do. I bet you do.
It's bad.
Yeah. What's that, Gianna?
I was spoiled.
Were you?
But I had a work for sex too.
Good. So you at least had a balance?
I had a balance.
Yeah, it takes a lot to admit that you're spoiled. I grew up in a good family with a lot of stuff, and yep, so I was certainly, yeah, had a very little perspective of what stuff cost, I think, growing up. So, yep. Yeah. Well, I'd say one of the things I found amazing moving here, probably 90% of the people I talk to that go to college are like, yeah, I pay for college myself. I have a 15-hour, 16, 18-hour, you know, units of class, and then I work 40 hours a week on top of that. Like, dang, like, how do you do that? So, but that's normal around here. Like, parents are like, love you, mean it, but figure it out, right? And that's, boy, that's hard. So I have a ton of respect for folks that go through college that way, and you wonder why it takes them 8 years, but it's like, yeah, of course it does, right? You got to work and pay the bills, and yeah, it ain't because you're dumb. It's because you got to work really hard. So, yeah, anyway, so it's a good perspective. So I was fortunate not to have to do that, but for what it's worth, so, okay? All right, back to Ruth. Jeez.
What GTI planes should we be on right now? Is it the fifth one?
Did you say second? More than two. Yeah.
I think we're on the fourth or the tenth.
Payments, got it, okay.
Where'd he go?
Where'd who go?
It's Friday morning.
Where's your coffee, Chaz? I want to say five, but I haven't been counting. So, who knows? What's your tab? Go like this when you say that. It's way better. Jenna, I think you just lost your crown today. I don't know what just happened. Yeah. So five. There you go. Perfect. Now that we're clear on that. All right. So let's do some review, shall we? What did we learn yesterday? Somebody tell me something that we learned. Review for me. What do we know? Emily's agreed to fix all the things I screwed up. Lack of feelings and relationships. So say stuff about...
feelings. Come to me.
I can fix them. No, I think there is some good stuff in chapter 2 in regards to... I don't think, I know. this is the scripture, right? It's inspired, I'm pretty sure. There's great stuff in here in regards to type of man, type of woman that you're looking for, and that probably would be worth spending some time on, I think, for us just to chat through that. So what do you guys see in Ruth? What do you see in Boaz? Let's talk about that for a second. So in terms of a singles perspective, what do you notice? Yeah, right? There's this great, my wife still can't figure it out, right? When she is working hard and has no makeup on and is dirty, right? And not working in the yard. I find that very attractive in her. She thinks she's ugly and whatever, but there's something very attractive, not just physically, but certainly physically, but just that character and that depth of, yeah, I'm not a, look, I don't need to be up in the house in the air conditioning and you know, fed grapes and doted upon, right? I can get outside and work, and I'm all right. So, or wherever the work's done. So that's absolutely. What else?
Women are attracted to generous, wealthy men.
Exactly. Generous, wealthy men. Fascinating. Again, my wife's brilliant. She made this observation. Chapter 2, verse 1. Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great. What is your description there of Boaz say? Great what? Wealth? Anybody have a different translation? Great what?
Standing,
okay. That word is used to describe wealth. It's used to describe strength. It's used to describe character. I think it's not just limited to his money. They're not saying he's fat and bald and loaded, right? I don't think that's how they're describing Boaz. They're saying he's a man of great character. And he happens to be wealthy as well, which is true, but I think it's bigger than that. I think this is a verse speaking of his character. He's got deep roots, if you will. He's a man of strength, which is what his name means, but it's part of his character. Okay? What else?
He doesn't cripple her.
What do you mean?
When she's in need, like it's an obvious need that she needs food, her mm-hmm. and Naomi, he makes her still work for it. So like the act of like just taking it out and putting it on the ground is still her feeling that worth of like she can do it.
Yeah.
But helping her in the same process.
That's solid, right? We learned a really hard lesson we used to call it Mission Christmas. Do you guys remember the days of that when we would go down to we would just hand out stuff to people that were in need, and it was insulting to the people that were in need because they didn't have a chance to be dignified in that. They were given stuff, and the fathers were embarrassed, and they found that what would happen often is when we would go down to visit the houses and bring turkeys and toys to the kids, and we were the heroes for 5 minutes, that the dads were mysteriously absent because they were ashamed of the fact that they couldn't provide those things. Well, that was a horrible, very undignified way to do it. And they changed the way they did it to where we now donate to the thrift store. They come in and work for in exchange for, you know, so many hours equals so many dollars, and then they can go shop. So they've earned it. It's like, man, that is a much more dignified way to do that. And it's much more honoring to the individual. So that's a great observation about Boaz. He doesn't do it for her, but he helps, right? And he cares enough to do some of the work, protects her, but if she's not willing to winnow the grain, then she's going to die, right? And he probably wouldn't have let it go that far, but, right? That's good. What else?
He has questions about her. He finds it's okay to ask about her and be like, hey, who is she? What
yeah.
Does she do? Where
does
she come?
Yeah. Is that okay, guys, to do a lot of behind-the-scenes research, right? There's nothing wrong with that. I talked to Michelle's roommates a lot about what type of gal she was to live with, right? And that helped me understand, do y'all like her? Because if you've lived with her, I don't want to live with her. She's a, you know, a nightmare, high maintenance, beauty queen, whatever. I don't know. You know, she's some high on herself, whatever. And I don't want any part of that, right? So she was beloved by her roommates. And anyway, so that's good. So ask questions, and that gets to the bottom of that. Roommates are often great sources of honesty. So, okay, what else? How hard is that, right? Gals, I feel for you. I would hate to be in your position. Like, that is, for a guy who struggles with patience, that's got to be really hard to wait. She kind of waited. Chapter 3 is going to be a little different, but my relationship actually mirrors this a lot, so not necessarily, I'm not Boaz, but I won't go there. I am neither rich nor bald or any of the things that are described of him, but my wife's actions were similar, so we'll talk through that in a very positive way. So, but that's hard, right? Just to wait on a guy and allow him the freedom to lead. Gang, by the way, in marriage, spiritual leadership is all about the wife. If you do not allow the husband the freedom to lead, he cannot lead. Okay? What is he going to do? If you decide, you know what, I'm the boss, I'm going to do whatever the heck I want to do. Ben, what are you going to do? You're going to take Sonny out in the front yard and arm wrestle and say, okay, I won, now submit to me and let me lead. It doesn't work. So if she wants to drop the hammer and say, we're not going to live in that area, and I'm not going to live in a house like that, or we're going to drive this kind of car, or our kids are going to go to school here. What do? You're screwed. You're just, okay, right?
Yes, ma'am, okay.
Right? Right? And that's a horrible place to be. So, ladies, that was one of the best lessons I learned in premarital counseling was, if my wife doesn't trust me with that authority that's been given to me, then I can't lead. And if I don't handle that authority with responsibility, well, she's never going to trust me. So, and I screw up a lot in my home in that area. You know, I don't always do a great job, surprise, surprise. But she still forgives me and allows me the freedom to do that and trust me even in the midst of mistakes, which is really hard, right? To say, yeah, you blew that one, but I'm gonna still follow you. You know, I trust that you're walking with God and not being an idiot, and we'll get a do-over on that one. So, that happens. So, ladies, remember that, okay? Good. Guys, what do you see in Ruth that you like? What's attractive about her?
She also took care of those around her. She
Right?
And those up, you know, doesn't specifically say, but it seems apparent that that was obvious that she wanted to be a teacher.
Yeah. Like, in context, I mean, that's a hard person. Like, she's a bitter, old, she's not getting married again. Like, if Ruth doesn't take care of her, who's taking care of her? Right? Nobody. So, what a great servant in Ruth, right? That's a marvelous quality. As you look at Proverbs 31, that character quality is exalted amongst women, to be just a servant, right? And Ruth certainly is. Good.
Is extreme because a Moabite woman in this area, it doesn't talk about it, but that, I'm sure, like, bad looks and the, just like, who is this woman?
Right.
Is intense.
Right. And what's fascinating, in chapter 3, Boaz is going to speak of her reputation in the community that's changed, because it certainly would have been that coming in, right? I mean, she would have been looked down upon. People knew who she was. How about her courage to go, right? That, boy... Guys, if God's going to lead you in neat places and do great things with your life, and you've got a wife that's scared to death to trust and follow and doesn't have an attitude of a Ruth of, all right, see you home, all right, let's go. Abram, you want to go to where? Canaan? All right, let's start packing. You know, if that's what God's called us to do, let's go, right? Supposed to go be missionaries in China? Okay, it's not what I woke up, you know, thinking about this morning, but if that's, you know, all right, I thought we were just taking the kids to preschool, but all right, if that's what God's, right? So you see a daring side of Ruth that's willing to trust, right? Because she has an understanding of who God is and that God's going to take care of her, she's willing to do the crazy, which is, yeah, that's neat to see in a gal. So what else? Cliff, you're married. Give us some insight. What do you see?
I see a loyalty in her. You know, she's not only is she a hard worker, but she is loyal to those around her.
Hmm. That's a forgotten quality in our day and age, right? With work, with whatever. That's super important. And having a wife that's that committed, you can see how that quality will play itself out in marriage is a great quality. It's well said. Right, right. It's neat how Naomi brought him to that point where she said, listen, there's no upside. There's no upside. And now it's like, okay, if you were coming for the benefits, Orpah just was like, yeah, no, thanks. I'll go home and I'll play my odds over here because they're a lot better, right? Yeah. Yeah. That's when push comes to shove with friendship, with other things, that's when you find out who's in, like when there's no upside. Right, and they're still your friend, they're still committed, they're still going to follow God when there's no, everyone else is gone, the fad's gone. Yeah, that's good.
She seems to have integrity. She follows through. She's doing. She respects the values that are given to her.
Yeah, for sure.
She doesn't take more. When she went to different corners, she didn't go out and take the. And then in time, she was allowed to take that, but she.
Well, that's a lot easier. Yeah. Grass is greener over there, right? Yeah. It's good, right? Yeah, absolutely. Cool. All right. Well, let's keep venturing on to chapter 3. Let's kind of watch how this unfolds. So we've seen, obviously, the development of them leaving. Moab coming back to Bethlehem. God has blessed that. They're back in the land. Ruth just so happens to show up in the field of this guy named Boaz, who we find out about. This guy is a kinsman. By the way, what is when Boaz heard, hey, Ruth and Naomi are back. Naomi is the husband of or wife of Elimelech. What's going off in his head? Does he know that he's a kinsman redeemer? Absolutely, right? He's like, yeah, that's my whatever. That means family, right? So he knows the connection. So. He would have been very well aware of the fact that, yeah, I fit into this picture potentially somehow, right? I think he also knew, according to the conversation we're about to have, he knows he's not first in line, but he certainly knows his potential role in this matter, okay? So we see the beginning of this relationship. We see the end of harvest now coming when Ruth has been in the fields day after day working. Boaz is taking care of her. And now in chapter 3, again, we have Naomi who is stepping in the place of what would normally be a father doing this. Now, I bring that up, and I mentioned it yesterday, and I think it's, again, worthwhile just to beat this drum again. What would a dad in this situation do? There's been some time spent together, some mutual interest expressed. There's something going on. This season of natural bumping into each other is about over. Daughter has said, boy, I am really interested in this guy. What would dad's role be at that point? What? Okay, possibly. Let me tell you what I would do as a dad, okay? I would call Boaz and say, hey, buddy, you and I need to sit down and have coffee. And I would take him out to coffee. What are your intentions with my daughter? You guys have been hanging out for 6 to 7 weeks. There is some interest on her side. I love her and desire to protect her. And if you're screwing around with her, you're going to meet my friend Remington. But if there's a desire to move on and you have the character that I hear that you do, I would love to begin to develop this relationship and I would love to invite you into this process. That would be my role as a dad because I love her and I care about her. As my daughter, I want to see the right type of man marry her. That's where I would step in. That's my job, right? To make sure that she ends up with a dude that loves Jesus and loves her as much as I love her and is going to have her best interest in mind as I do. That's the dad's role. That's what we don't have here, okay? So the advice that's given by Naomi is risky, to say the least, okay? And it's not what would normally be seen in that culture. And I think we've gotten away from that in our culture to where you're like, dad, like, you're just going to embarrass me. Please leave, go away, quit wearing, you know, your shorts and your Argyle socks together, right, when you mow the, you know. But that's where a dad's role would have played out. Mark Driscoll, by the way, when he taught this text, did a fascinating history of dating, and it was the first I'd ever heard of it and how it came about. I just want you guys to listen to this. It was just crazy to think through dating and the way that we talk about it from this perspective, and I'm not a dating hater, okay, just so you guys hear that. I dated my wife, and I dated other people, right? He talked about prior to my wife, I dated other people. Yes, it's true. And there were actually girls that thought, no. That guy's not an idiot. And then they met me and they were like, no, he is an idiot. So moving on. He talked about the idea that dating began in the late 1860s. In the word, that was in the United States, that's when the word was introduced to our society. And it was synonymous with prostitution. Okay. The idea was, it was a term to say, I'm going on a date. So men would leave the home to go visit a prostitute. And that's where that term got associated with it was actually started with the idea of the same thing as prostitution, okay? Prior to that time and even up to like the early 1900s, when a man was interested in a woman, how would that process work? What would you guys guess would be prior to cars, prior to dating? What would that process look like if you found yourself interested in a gal? Yeah, courting. And what would that look like? Go to the dad. In prior to courting, like how would just the meeting and the relationship and how would that develop? You go to the house. And who's there? Yeah, Erica. Erica's dad and Erica's family. And okay, so I go in and I get invited over. I have an appointment. I show up and I hang out and I play gin rummy with the family. And dad is there and mom is there. And there's this controlled, supervised environment. And then when it's time to go, you would leave, right? So daughter is in a home. She gets to interact with this dude. And dad gets to evaluate along with the rest of the family. And they go, no, that guy's a bozo. He's not invited back over again. Or you know what? I like that guy. Let's have him over for tea again, right? And it became that kind of environment, right? Well, in the 1920s, what do you suppose changed that? What happened in the 1920s? 1914? Huh? The car. Model T, right? So what happens now? Guy pulls up, pulls up to the door and takes the woman out of that protected environment. And they go out and do stuff, right? And that's kind of the idea. So, and then what happens after that? Guy comes, he's bought a car, he's got a nice suit, he's picked up this gal, he's dropped a Benjamin on dinner and a movie. And then what's expected, ladies? And that's how that became exactly what it is. And gals, if you've been on dates in that deal. There's that unspoken pressure and expectation of he's dropped some coin on me and he's expecting something in return. What is that called? Money in exchange for sexual favors. It's called prostitution, right? That's exactly what it is. And that's why that link, I thought, well, that's fascinating, right? I've done these things, so you owe me these things, right? And that continued with in the 1940s, that's kind of the way it was played out. And then in the 1960s, when birth control entered to the picture, now there's no fear of, well, I'm not going to get pregnant, and that began to help that. In the 60s, with Woodstock and this, you know, sexually liberated women and all these things that played out, that's what kind of led into that. 1973, abortion was legalized, and then 1974, no-fault divorce. And you have this really weird, awkward thing that we call dating today, but its history is tied to something that's very unhealthy and related directly to prostitution. So I thought, boy, that's fascinating. Okay. Now, all that to say, again, there's nothing wrong or anti-biblical about dating. Okay. I think there is a right way and a wrong way to do that. And I will certainly guide my daughters in a very different direction to date in a way that I didn't as an 18, 19-year-old non-Christian, right? So I was, I didn't have a square head on my shoulders at all. But that's fascinating to me, okay? So as we think through what's going on here, this is kind of plan B, okay? So chapter 3, verse 1 and following is not, I don't think, God's best for Ruth. This is a Hail Mary, okay, if anything. So harvest is over. She's talking to Naomi, dad's not in the picture, and she says again, 3 verse 1, you need to go meet Boaz, okay? And what was the gist of the conversation, ladies? What is she to do? Clean up, go look nice, okay? You mentioned the cloak yesterday. I think it was for disguise. She was to go and be hidden from the rest of the people, hide in the background while it was eating and drinking the festivity. And then in verse 4, what is she to do? Read that.
When he lies down, observe the place where he lies, then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do. And she replied, all that you say, I will do.
Yeah, I gotta go, oh, what the heck does that mean, right? Exactly. It's further problematic, okay? Yeah, it's... It's awkward on a lot of levels. So paint the picture, okay? They're at the top of the hill, okay, in Bethlehem. This would have been the winnowing floor. So it's at the top of the highest location in Bethlehem because that's where they would winnow the grain because that's where the wind's going to be the strongest, okay? This winnowing floor would have been shared by various people at various times. Naomi happened to know tonight Boaz is going to be there with other people winnowing his grain, okay? So you would... Okay, throw it up there. You guys know the process, right? At the end of it all, you've got a huge grain pile, which is basically like you've just cast your paycheck and you got Benjamins, right? And that's your income. So you sleep next to your income to make sure thieves don't come and other people aren't a part of that, right? So you would physically sleep there, okay? So she says he's partied, he's happy, he's full, he's had a couple glasses of wine, they've had an enjoyable evening, he's going to go to sleep. You sneak in, come up next to him, and uncover his feet, right? It is kind of odd that it's his feet. And he will tell you what you should do, which has got all kinds of, like, weird double meanings or, like, what does that mean, right? The feet is interesting in that oftentimes in Scripture, that word is used to mean the sexual organ. So this could be implying exactly what you think it's implying, which is... you come up next to him, you look nice, you've showered, you're presentable, and you uncover him and say, game on, right? That could be exactly what this means. That is a potential in the text. And based on the rest of the context, it's like, maybe, right? And I think at the very least, this is a very gray, the way she approaches it is... I think Ruth is willing to go there, to be completely honest. I think she is willing. Paint her background for me. Is she grown up in a Christian home? No? Would this have been pretty normal in her, this sexual, right? This would have been something that was not uncommon in her day and age, right? To win a guy with those sorts of things. So is that what she was willing to do? Maybe. I think she was at least willing to go there. And Naomi is saying, yeah, so, yep, that's good.
She, like, I think a virgin doing that would be a lot different.
Right.
Right,
she's, sorry, damaged goods, right? No one is going to be interested in a gal that's been married for 10 years, hasn't had kids, she's probably barren. Why would anybody want to marry her? And she's a Moabite. So she has nothing to lose.
I had someone tell me that, like biblically, like wedding ceremonies are more traditional. Like, sex is like the entrance to marriage.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, in fact, often what would happen is to prove the virginity of the couple, the couple at a Jewish wedding would go into a side room. They would walk literally off the altar, okay? And now it's time for the honeymoon. And you go into a room. And the best man would stand at the door while they consummated the marriage. Okay? And since you asked, the mom would come out with a sheet displaying the wife's virginity and the blood on the sheet. I mean, that's how far it would go. And they would celebrate. Yeah! Daughter was a virgin, and the marriage is consummated. Okay, standing on an altar exchanging vows is great. That is not what makes you married. Okay, marriage is when you join in a one flesh relationship with another person. So that's why they would consummate the marriage on the spot, and then they would head to the reception and eat. You're like, hey, what were you guys doing? Having sex? Awesome, right? I like our way a little bit better. No, we'll eat and party with you, and then we'll get in the limo and go far, far away from our parents and my in-laws and everyone else and be alone, right? So, but yeah, that's, in God's eyes, that's how it works, so.
What are they all talking about while
they're in their conversation? Right. So. Right, but it was a celebration, right? They would come out and be like, yeah, right? Because it was done right and appropriately in the right context. It's like, you guys honored God and now you're married, so. I think that is a very reasonable interpretation of what's going on here. And as we read through it, that's exactly it, right? And I think sometimes our commentaries are a little bit too PG on what's happening here. Like, they just won't say that. Like, I'm reading two guys that I deeply respect this morning, and they're like, oh, you know, she's trusting in the character of Boaz, and Naomi knows how Boaz is going to be, and you know, he's going to wake up in the middle of the night with two glasses in him and a beautiful woman standing there offering him. That's clearly not what was happening. I'm like, I don't know. It very well may have been. I think the determining factor is how Boaz is going to respond to this. Because he is a man of character and strength, he chooses to respond differently, okay? But I think Ruth was not forcing herself upon him, but she was basically saying, if you're game, I'm game, clearly. So if you want to take the next step, I'm in. And it was that clear, okay? So,
but this isn't a prescription to say, women, this is your initiative.
No. This is descriptive, and it is it's plan B. And it's like, Ruth, what are you going to do? And no, Naomi was cunning. She's thinking through, boy, how are we going to do this, right? So she realizes at the time of, is drawn, you know, it's here. We've got to do something. Okay, so let's watch this unfold, and we'll paint. There's another side to this. Okay, it's not just. I don't think that's the only possibility. Okay, so go down to the grain pile, uncover his feet. It's dark. It's private. Lay down next to him and say, whatever he tells you to do, do it. Which means exactly what it means. So if he says game on, it's game on. If he says let's play hopscotch, then okay, we'll do that. I don't know. So, but that, I think there's a very real, like, if he wants to take the next step, then do it, right? And Jeremy, I think for that reason, okay? If you consummate the marriage, then he's in and you're in, and okay, so. Yeah, we see that very clearly as, you know, David and Bathsheba, right? I slept with another man's wife, and that was oops, but guess what? Now you're in my family. So, take a knee in.
So, in this, now, if you were to sleep with a woman, you'd have to marry her?
Have to is a strong word. We see in Deuteronomy that there is a law that basically says if the dad says, you're a chump, then you can be reimbursed, basically, financially. if the dad says, I don't want you to have anything to do with my daughter, but yes, sex is equal to marriage in God's eyes.
So why do they say now, wait until you're married?
Because of that reason. Because that is the that is marriage. So marriage in God's eyes is not two people standing in an altar and exchanging vows. It's the it's two becoming one, and two become one through intercourse, right? So that is marriage. And that's why that act is reserved for marriage, because that's how sacred God sees it. It's meant for a specific context. It's good, it's wonderful, and it's proper, but that is what makes you one. Does that make sense? So it's fascinating. I told you guys this before. I'm not a virgin. Hello. Three kids. I was not a virgin before I married. Okay, I lived 18, 19 years as a non-Christian, and boy, if I had a reset button that I could push and do over, boy, I would, right? I made some decisions that, frankly, were not the best, okay? And I never understood why people said, wait, first of all, until you get into marriage, until I was married and went, oh, now I get to deal with the baggage of that I didn't understand would be baggage until I got into marriage. So part of it's for that reason, and part of it is because that's how God sees it. It's a sacred thing that is meant for marriage. It's a fire in a fireplace, and it's beautiful there, but when it gets expressed in a wrong way, and you build a fire in the middle of your living room, it burns down your home. So it's not proper in that context. So, but to look at through the lenses of God and to say, so what I was basically doing was uniting myself with a woman that was not my wife, was dishonoring to God and not what he wanted. So I was, so that's the picture, okay? And again, God's forgiven, we've moved on, it's all good, but boy, there's reasons galore as to why not to go down that road. So, and I've got friends of mine now that are, that by the grace of God, and these are painful conversations at times, they went into marriage, got married young, both were virgins, have been married for 18, 19 years, and have a faithful, great marriage. And they're wondering if that was the best way to do it, if they shouldn't instruct their kids to go enjoy dating relationships to the full degree and then get married later on, because they would at least have experienced. I'm like, oh my God, I would cut off an arm to be able to go back and live the life that you guys lived. So it's sad to see that sometimes that's not valued like it should be. So for what it's worth, those of you guys that entered into marriage that way or will, it is a blessing. For those of you that haven't, you're not the first. God is gracious and good, and you'll understand some of the baggage that comes with that, and it's certainly not insurmountable, but it's baggage nonetheless, okay? So there you go. All right, so Noah uncovers feet. We've been here 30 minutes, 40 minutes, and have covered, I think, a verse. So we're going slower than we were yesterday, actually, okay? Which is hard to believe, because I thought we would finish Ruth yesterday and be halfway through 1 Samuel. So amazing. All right, so verse 6. Emily, pick up there.
So she went down to the threshing floor and did just as her mother-in-law had commanded her. And when Boaz had eaten and drunk and his heart was merry, he went to lie down at the end of the heap of grain. Then she came softly and uncovered his feet and lay down.
All right, so literally took the blanket off of his feet, okay, lay down next to him, and that's, okay, and he has the reaction is exactly what you think it would. Keep going.
At midnight, the man was startled and turned over, and behold, a woman lay at his feet. He said, "Who are you?" And she answered, "I am Ruth, your servant."
Okay, so he has no idea who this is, right? Wakes up, there's a woman at the end of his bed, which is odd. You're a single dude. This doesn't happen, right? And he says, he's startled and says, "Who are you?" Okay, somebody turn real quick to Hosea 9, verse 1. Somebody else turn to Ezekiel 16, 8. Somebody turn to, sorry, who has those? Who's got Hosea? Hosea 9, okay. Somebody take Ezekiel 16, 8. You've got Ezekiel? Who's got Hosea? Got it, okay. J.D., Malachi 2, 16. And somebody get Deuteronomy 22, 30, okay? Just want to unpack some of these words so you guys can see them in context of what's going on, okay? Start with Hosea 9, 1. This situation would have been normative at a winnowing grain pile, okay? Just read 9, 1. Oh, my bad. I keep... Malachi 2, 16. I forgot who had it. It's there somewhere. I had to find it yesterday, too. Wouldn't it be nice if it was just like all alphabetical? H-I-J. Oh, Jeremiah. Okay, good, good, good. Chronicles. I don't know where Chronicles is.
All right. Hosea 9:1.
Yep.
Rejoice not, O Israel. Exult not like the peoples. For you have played the whore, forsaking your God. You have loved a prostitute's wages on all threshing floors.
Okay, so what would have been normative to see on a threshing floor? A prostitute. So when Boaz wakes up in the middle of the night, and there's a woman lying at his feet, what's his immediate thought? This would have been normative. They're celebrating, they're eating, they're drinking, they're partying, and there's prostitutes that are coming because people have money, people have wine, and it's, okay, that would have been the situation. So he wakes up and thinks, what the heck, right? There's a woman at my feet that is waking me up, and she's not wanting to go play gin rummy, okay? So, right, so who are you, right? Are you a thief? No, you're a woman. Okay, so if you're not a thief, then you're probably a prostitute. I am Ruth, your maid, okay? So spread your covering over your maid, for you are a close relative. Now, what does that mean, okay? She says spread your covering over your maid. What is that word? Anybody know? Turn real quick back to chapter 2, verse 12. This was Boaz praying for Ruth, okay? I want you to see the same word that Boaz uses, okay? Somebody read 2:12. May God reward you, may God take care of you, and the God of Israel under whose wings, okay, it's the word kanaf, K-A-N-A-F, this is the God you take, and may God take, you're going to take refuge underneath his wings, okay? Ruth uses the same word, spread your kanaf over me, put your covering on top of me. So she is asking Boaz to answer, to be the answer to the prayer that he prayed earlier. You said you wanted God to bless me, to spread his covering on me. I want you to be my covering, okay? Now, to see other places where that is used, you have Ezekiel, Jeremy? 16:8, read that. Okay, now, in context here, this is God speaking, rebuking a prostitute, okay, in the book of Hosea, okay, or Ezekiel. Okay, so this idea of covering, God is rebuking Israel in a sense of being a prostitute, and he does what? He spreads his kanaf over her and does what? Read the rest of the verse. What does that mean? A covenant of what? Marriage. So to spread a covering on somebody is a euphemism for saying, I declared my intentions to you, okay, to marry you, even though you were wayward and a prostitute, and that's Israel, and we see the whole the theme of that in Hosea as a gomer, and this actually this woman, but he's saying, I've committed myself to you, to it's an engagement, right? I've committed myself to you, I'm going to cover you, I'm going to take care of you. So is that what Ruth is asking for? Put your covering on me. Or is it, hey, I just uncovered you, let's see what happens next, okay? There's a lot going on here, okay? Yeah. Yeah, and wonderfully ambiguous. What am I really saying? I don't know, Boaz. What am I saying? And that's, I think that's part of the tension is like, we're not sure, right? So I think she literally is in a place where, Boaz, what do you want to do? I'm willing to go down either road. Naomi said, do whatever you say, and I'm going to do whatever you say. And depending on how his character is, okay, this idea of covering in marriage, who's got Malachi 2:16? Read that real quick.
For the man who does not love his wife but divorces her, says the Lord, the God of Israel, covers his garment with violence.
Okay, so that word covering is the same idea. So this idea of covering is this, again, this relationship, this idea of taking one underneath you, you're uncovering, that's not proper. Deuteronomy 22:30, someone have that one?
Yeah.
Go for it.
A man shall not take his father's wife, so that he will not uncover his father's skirt.
Okay, you see this uncover, his father's skirt, that's the word kanaf, okay, to uncover a skirt, that's improper, okay? So, again, you see this language is used for marriage, okay? So, she's coming in, be the covering for me, okay? You're made, for you are a close relative, okay? Why is that language important? A close relative, anybody know what word that is? We talked about it yesterday. It's the redeemer, okay? Goel, G-O-E-L. put your covering over me, for you are a kinsman redeemer. You are able to redeem me, okay? So that's the offer. So again, I want you to notice Boaz's response, okay? Now, again, he just woke up, okay? He's startled. He's not sure if this is a thief, if this is a prostitute. Oh, gosh, it's Ruth. Like, all this is in a second happening to him, and he's got to put... So you're going to see his character come out immediately. They're alone. No one's watching. It's dark. And here's this beautiful woman who now smells good and is cleaned up and is offering very clearly her to him. Okay? Verse 10, how does she respond, or he respond?
Then he said, "May you be blessed of the Lord, my daughter. You have shown your last kindness to be better than the first by not going after young men, whether poor or rich."
Now, without even reading the rest, how do you think this is going to end? How is Boaz going to respond, based on just the words that came out of his mouth there? Right? What is he mentioning? Okay. Who is he mentioning? God. Do you think they're going to sleep together right after that? Probably not, right? So tell me about Boaz's character. First thing on his mind when he wakes up isn't, wow, available woman, two glasses of wine, sex, game on. He doesn't do that. He immediately speaks to the Lord. He's turning the conversation the way that he wants it, and he's assuming, you know, he's reading into what Ruth is saying, but he's not going there, okay? He's now turned the conversation a different direction, and he is going to honor the intent of her question, okay, in the offer. She has basically said to him, if we look at this in a half full way, which I tend to, though she's, I think, still willing to go down the other route, she is not proposing marriage to him, but she's proposing that he propose. So she's like, hey, I'm not saying anything, I'm just saying. I think that's what's happening here, okay? I'm not asking you to marry me, but here's my finger and there's a ring and, right? I think that's the picture of what's happening, all right? So Boaz says, wow, your kindness that you showed now is even better than the original kindness of me getting to hang out with you and meet you and to see your character. Like, that's, this is even better that you didn't go after young men, whether rich or poor. Like, you had every opportunity to go pursue the Samsons, the Sauls, the whatever, okay? But you didn't. So, verse 11, keep going.
"Now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you are a woman of excellence."
Okay, so we talked about that before. What has happened to Ruth's reputation in town? It's changed, or at least been solidified as she is a woman of character, okay? How does Boaz see her question, by the way, in 11? "I will do for you whatever you ask." How does he interpret her coming to him in the middle of the night? Which is what, specifically? Does he see it as sex? Doesn't seem that way, does it? It seems like he's saying, oh, you're interested in me. You want me to put my covering on you. You want to be my, oh! Like, I don't think he's put it all together yet, right? He knows that she's a young, attractive, godly girl whose reputation is improved, but he sees her as not available to him. Does that make sense? So I don't think he's wanted maybe that, but he's never thought that Ruth would be interested. She's out of my league type, okay? And I think that's his response. So when she comes to him, she's saying, I'm very much interested in you. I'm willing. In fact, I want to marry you. And if you'll do your part, I am in. So that's kind of how I see Boaz's response of telling us to how he interpreted the situation. Okay? So, "I will do whatever you ask, for all my people in the city know that you're an excellent woman." Okay? And this is his answer. Here's now the next dramatic hurdle we've got to get over.
"Now, it is true I am a close relative. However, there is a relative closer than I
am. I am a Goel. However, there is a Goel that's one step up the ladder. There is someone that has first dibs on you, Ruth." Okay? So, according to Levitical law, the next person that would be in line to take Ruth was not Boaz, right? So, okay? Now, just a couple things of note as we talk about a Goel. Here is what a kinsman redeemer, this is the things that they would have to fulfill, okay? Number one, you would redeem the property associated with that individual, okay? So, which means what? Someone's going to give you a grip of land, okay? We live in an agrarian society. Good? Absolutely. Here's 60 acres, free. Where do I sign, right? What farmer isn't going to say, really? Like, that land's been taken care of, it's good land, and now it's mine? Done. They have Elimelech's land, though, okay? That land that would have been Elimelech's has to go somewhere. How could they? They've been out in Moab. They have no way to take care of it, but it's in their inheritance. So they can't. They have that available to them, probably. There's something, and you're going to see that in a second, because Boaz is going to mention it. So all that was Elimelech's, they're the last in line, but they don't have the means to, right? It's like, hey, Mike, here's a mansion. I'm like, dude, I can't even pay the PG&E on that, much less take, like, even if it was free. Like, that's kind of the, like, what am I supposed to do with that, right? I can't even turn the lights on, much less, you know, all the other things that go with maintaining a mansion for free. So that's the idea. So they could maintain it. Based on what I see in Numbers with the daughters of Zelophehad, there would have been an inheritance that would have went to the daughters and then probably ultimately to Naomi. So not Ruth, but Naomi. But I think they just didn't have the way to maintain it. So whether they needed an actual kinsman and redeemer to come in and seal the deal and make it theirs, I think that's a piece of the equation. So, but there is land available, okay? So there's redeeming the property. Secondly, redeeming the family member from slavery. Okay, so essentially, if you can't pay your bills, you either sold yourself or you sold your property. And at this point, basically, Ruth is like an indentured servant, right? She's working on somebody's property. She's on the welfare system. So that person would need to buy her land and take care of it or receive it as an inheritance and redeem that person, which means what? You're going to take that woman into your care and she's going to cost you, right? She needs money, she needs food, she needs clothing, she needs shelter, she needs, okay, that's another mouth to feed, in a sense. Now, it's not a baby, but this is another person who's going to take money to provide for, okay? Thirdly, according to what we see in Numbers, if there was some type of wrongdoing in the past, if somebody killed that member of a family, like if Elimelech was murdered, what would that person's job be then? They were to go kill the person that killed them, right? This idea of vengeance, okay, so to execute murderers of the family, to take vengeance on people if that was necessary, not in this case, but certainly would have been in others. Let's see. I'm trying to read my handwriting now. They would have taken any of the money that would have been a part of that inheritance, and then they would have represented the person in a lawsuit. So the two major things here would have been the land and Naomi and Ruth. Okay, so those are the two factors, okay? So Boaz says there's another, okay, who's another kinsman, and he says in verse 13, this is his answer.
Remain this night, and when morning comes, if he will redeem you, let him redeem you. But if he does not wish to redeem you, then I will redeem you as the Lord lives.
Okay, so there has to be, obviously, you have to be a relative, so you have to fit in the clan to do this, okay? What other things have to be present? Assuming that those were the responsibilities, what must you have as an individual? The willingness, and what else? The money. You would have to have the funds to be able to assume that responsibility, okay? Does that make sense? So, again, if someone gave me a mansion tomorrow, I'd say thank you, but no, I can't afford it. I can't afford to keep it unless I get to sell it, but you couldn't do that, okay? So, that's the idea, okay? So, verse 14, keep going.
Then she went into the city.
Okay, so 14 is kind of an odd verse as well. So stay here tonight with me, okay? So sleep with me, sleep next to me. Before the sun gets up, get up really early in the morning. Give me your cloak, I'm going to put some food in it. Return home before anyone sees you so that they don't think that you were here. What's going on there? How so?
Leaving early and then her having a reason towards being there if she was known there.
Yeah, I think that's the half full version, which I think is right on. This isn't a, there's no hanky panky going on. There's nothing inappropriate. He's saying, I don't want your reputation to be damaged. Okay, gals, talk to me about that. How important is that? What does that look like today? What does it look like for a guy to say, I'm going to be concerned about you as a single gal and your reputation? What does that tangibly look like? What would you hope a guy would do to maintain and defend your reputation? You're a godly gal, known as a godly woman. What could tarnish those things? Yeah, yeah. That was for whatever reason, that was a hot button in our college ministry. Like, it would grieve me when I would drive by coming home from whatever, and I saw her car, not Brad and Jen's, whatever her and whatever him, parked in front of an apartment, and those were the only two cars there, and it was 1 a.m. You're like, is that honoring to that gal? Like, they may be in there, you know, who knows? Playing Wii Fit, right? Who knows? Or they may not be. But I don't know. Is that honoring to her reputation? So that was a great one. I don't want anyone to think that my car is at your house overnight because of what could be assumed in that. Okay? What else? Yeah.
And everyone's like, what?
Yeah.
And it's totally misinterpreted in her reputation. It was like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
So if he would choose to, like, he could maybe send me to, like, no, it's between us. We know what's going on.
Right. It's funny, you guys are growing up in a generation where there is no private. Everything's public. Everybody's got a phone. Everyone's got a camera on their phone. Everyone's going to post it to Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or whatever, right? And it could be, you know, they're at a bar and they were watching some band and she's got a red Solo cup in her hand, so she must be getting hammered. No, she was drinking water, but everyone else was hammered that was in the picture, so she must, they were doing nothing wrong. So, you know what I mean? So you guys live in a very, it's a fishbowl, it's hard, right? Those are great examples, and that's, it's good to think through. Would that honor her if I posted that picture? Maybe not. Could that be misconstrued? Potentially. So I don't think I will, right? So things like that. You want a guy that's concerned about those things, okay? You're probably not spending the night on a threshing floor, right, winnowing wheat. I doubt any of you can be doing that anytime soon, okay? But there are things to think about in the context of a relationship, right? I used to drive Michelle freaking crazy because we would be at her apartment and we would maybe watch a movie or whatever, and at 10:30 I said, I'm going home, okay? I'm leaving. I don't care if we have to pay the late fee to Blockbuster, but I can't. I know what happens to me when I get tired and it's dark and it's, so I'm going home, okay? I know myself, okay? Both feet remain on the floor during movies, right? Because as soon as you get horizontal, it's like, I can't do it. So you're beautiful and I'm attracted to you and sit over there, right? We can watch Forrest Gump, but you just can't sit next to me, okay? So, we didn't have a perfect relationship in that regard, but we tried to set healthy boundaries in an area where I knew that I struggled as a guy to say, listen, I need to put healthy boundaries for me. Other guys may or may not have these same struggles, but I do. So this is what our dating relationship is going to look like. Okay. So we held off on a lot of physical things until way late in the relationship, just because some physical tended to lead to more physical, so it was just easier to not do any physical, right? So we'll say goodbye outside. I do not come inside, right? You just go, right? So those are the things that, at least as a guy that was trying to put the wheels on his faith, was at least apparent of, because I had guys like Brad around and older godly men that would help me in these areas and say, these are some things to think about in your dating relationship with this gal, okay? So things to consider, okay? So guys, anything in that regard that you can think of that you do or that you're conscious of to protect single gals' reputations? Sonny, anything that Ben did for you Cliff, anything for your wife? Right.
So, I mean, I fell asleep usually before the dates ended.
That helps when mom and dad are right there, right?
Exactly.
Yep. That's good. It makes it a lot easier. Mm-hmm. Probably not as convenient, but you know what? It makes life easier in that area, for sure.
I dated someone where that protection was like there, where if we were like at my house watching a movie or something, and like my family was leaving, like they'd leave and walk out the door because that's my family's more relaxed. They'd be like, guys, you just get up and leave. You'd be like, I'm going to see ya. Like,
yeah.
It's not happening. I'm right. Not gonna be here alone with you, so bye.
Right. Yeah.
Just with that, like.
And as a gal, you're thinking, well, it's terribly inconvenient, but I respect that, right? It was probably a pain at the time, but you look back on that and go, I'm assuming in your relationship, I'm probably healthier for having spent time with a guy like that, even though it didn't end in marriage, because now that painted a picture for me of the type of guy that I want to spend time with in the future, because that was healthy. So good for him, right? And that. Now you've got a standard of some goofball that doesn't want to do that? Right? Good. All right. So you guys get the point. Boaz is trying to protect your reputation. Contextually figure out what that is today. You know, you live in a very different generation. I dated 15 plus years ago, and grateful that a lot of pictures of me didn't end up on the internet in my fraternity days and the stuff that could have been not even misconstrued, just construed, right? It wouldn't have been hard to connect the dots because I was an idiot. But anyway, there you go. Okay? So, I will go redeem you, okay? You lay here until morning, leave early. She takes care of her needs in terms of food, and she went into the city, so she goes home. 16, let's see how this report goes back to Naomi.
And when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, how did you fare, my daughter?
Yeah, like, what is she asking, I wonder, right? So, how'd it go, right? Keep going.
Said to me, you must not go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law. She replied, wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out. For the man will not rest, but will settle the matter today.
Now, again, here's, I think, again, some more evidence to what does it seem that Naomi was expecting in this situation? Is she disappointed that something other than what happened didn't happen? No, she's like, okay, good. He's a man of character. You communicated, hey, I'm in. Cover me with your garment. Ask me to marry you, Boaz, and I'm in, okay? So she seems to be pleased with that. So she's trusting in the character of Boaz, right? So I laugh and say our relationship, Michelle and I, has mirrored this in that she hit those turning points in our relationship far before I did, right? Because I'm a thick-headed idiot, and she became aware of, boy, we're heading down this road, and my heart is getting to a place where there needs to be a fork in the road, and our first one was from friendship to dating. And she drew a line in the sand, basically, and said, I need to guard my heart, and I'm not asking you to go anywhere you're not willing to go, but there's either a right turn or a left turn here, but we can't continue heading down the same path and being friends and spending this type of time together without a commitment. And she was basically saying, I'm willing to go whichever direction you choose. So she was clearly saying, I'm in if you're in, but if you're not in, then there is no continuing down the same path. And I said, okay, I'm out. So that was my answer. So, very smart. So that took about a week to figure out, oh, that was the wrong decision. That was stupid. So we spent, I think, maybe 3 weeks apart or something like that. And I was like, oh, I think I like her more than I thought I did. Like, there is something here. So I had to come back and say, oh, I think I do want to date you. I think I want to make a, you know, so I'm sorry. And then, again, on into engaged or dating, it was like, boy, she knew. She said 6 months into our dating relationship, she's like, I'm ready to marry him. Like, I made up my mind. This is the guy. Well, it took me a year and some months, and she had to wait patiently. Like, right? That was, what's Ruth's job at this point? That sucks. But that's like, it's in Boaz's hands. You need to trust that, and you don't need to push it. You don't need to manipulate it. You don't need to call his buddy and find out what's happened. And has he talked to so-and-so yet? You know, it's just, no, you sit and wait and trust, and that's hard. So, okay? So, chapter 4, verse 1, let's see how this turns out. Okay, so give me some observations, you brilliant students of the Bible. Where are they? The gate. Why are they at the gate of the city? Everyone's there, okay? Who is everyone? The officials, okay? So what are we about to enter into? There's an official agreement that's about to happen, and we've got witnesses to this. So the elders of the city are watching this go down. There's a reason that Boaz is waiting at the gate and not at this dude's house, okay? Hey, Homestucks, come here. We need to talk. Hey, all y'all, stay here, okay? We're about to have a conversation, okay? Turn aside, friend. Sit down, okay? Now, Boaz is brilliant. I want you to watch how he negotiates, okay? It's scary at first, but he's absolutely brilliant. Turn aside and sit down, friend. Two, read that.
And he took 10 men of the elders of the city and said, sit down here till there's that man.
Okay, so you see what he's doing. So now we've got a crowd, we've got an official. This is judge and jury, and right, they're all there. All right, so stop there. So what does he offer to this guy? Land. And it's on the cheap. It's you, and there's another guy after you. Okay, and he doesn't tell him yet that it's him, but, and I'm sorry, he does. He says at the end, if you're not going to, then I will. Okay, but it's yours. So what's the most desired thing in this? The land, right? So you're getting land, okay? End of verse 4, what does this guy say? I'll redeem it. Which means what? He takes the land, and he takes Naomi, and he takes Ruth. Love story's over. He just took everything. So this thing is ended. Officially, it's done, because he says, I'll redeem it. Okay? So watch what Boaz does. Okay? You want the land. Okay? You've got to have the relationship, you've got to have the desire, and you've got to have the funds. Okay? Verse 5. Huh, so now what does he offer? Ruth and Naomi, okay? Ruth the Moabitess, just threw that in there, right? What is he saying? Is this a no-strings-attached deal? No. If you want the land, you've got to take bitter mother-in-law, Mara, okay? And then you've got to take her daughter-in-law, Ruth, by the way, who is from Moab. I don't know what this guy knows about the situation, but apparently not a lot, because he hasn't figured all these things out. Boaz has to tell him. So how is he painting the situation? Right. And is this all positive? He starts that way with the land, right? Hey, they're selling a piece of property. It's all yours. I'm second in line, but boy, if you want it, take it. Okay, it's a good deal. But, oh, there's bitter mother-in-law who's really mad at life right now, and then you get this Moabite woman, okay? So he paints it as, I think in a way, he's very shrewd. It's kind of a, hey, there's strings. Here are the strings. Okay. Verse 5. I'm sorry. Verse 6.
And the redeemer said, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I impair my inheritance.
What does that mean? I cannot redeem it for myself because I would jeopardize my own inheritance. What is he saying? I can't afford it. I've got financial responsibilities. I am not in a position to do that. It's too costly for me, okay? That may have been a nice way out. It may have been, look, I don't want any part of some Moabite woman. I don't know who she is, right? So, man, if you want it, take it, right? So what then does that say about Boaz and the type of guy that he's been as a single that we didn't talk about? What has he done? What type of guy is he in terms of business savvy? And he's financially secure, right? Is this some loser single dude that doesn't know how to hold down a job or be self-sufficient or is, you know, whether he's got millions of bucks or somewhere in between, he's worked for himself, he's built up a business, and he happens to have a lot of money. And it's not so much the money, but it's the responsibility that he has demonstrated. He has now the ability to act because he's been wise with his finances, right? So, gals, that's something to consider. Okay, you don't need a guy that's filthy wealthy. That's not the point. But is he responsible? Can he hold down a job? Okay. Is he? Can he take care of himself? Can he make his PG&E payment? Okay. I don't care where he lives or if he lives with nine guys in a one-bedroom apartment and they all pay $20. That's fine, right? But can he take care of himself, or is he still milking off of someone else at 32 years old and, right, can't do anything on his own? Those are two very different pictures, okay? So he's responsible and has done that. So this guy says, man, I'm not in a financial situation to do that. I can't do it, okay? So he says, I would jeopardize my own inheritance. Verse 6, continue on there.
Take my right of redemption yourself, for I cannot redeem.
So now we got the rights. Boaz. Okay, so love story is not, yay, right? See, there's feelings. Moving on. 7.
Now this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning redeeming and exchanging. To confirm a transaction, the one drew off his sandal and gave it to the other. And this was the matter of attesting in Israel. So when the redeemer said to Boaz, buy it for yourself, he drew off his sandal.
Bizarre. I have no idea. That's a spit and a shake in their culture, right? We're good. Okay, we're agreeing. Elders, we're good. So here's my sandal. Okay, it's yours. That is your land. I think the picture is, how did Abraham claim his land? What did God tell him to do? You guys remember? Walk it. Which means what? Put your sandal on it. Here's my sandal. That's your land. Go walk it. Okay, I think that's kind of the picture of what they're talking about. So that's his land. You get to have the right to tread foot on that because that is yours. Okay? Verse 9, keep going.
Also Ruth the Moabite, widow of Mahalon, I have bought to be my wife, to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brothers and from the gate of his native place. You are witnesses this day.
Right, so he gets to be, on many levels, the hero. So he gets Ruth, he gets to continue on the name, he gets the property, right? This is the love story that doesn't end like Romeo and Juliet with two dead people at the end of it all, right? So it's good. Okay, 11, keep going. What does that mean? Why would they say like Rachel and Leah? Those women had lots of kids. And what's the condition of Ruth as far as we know? She's barren. Married 10 years, no kids. So you just assume they probably tried and they probably didn't have kids. So pray that she is fruitful, okay? And may God achieve wealth for you and you be famous in Bethlehem. Moreover, may your house be like the house of Perez and Tamar before Judah. Through the offspring by which the Lord shall give you by this young woman. Okay, so may your house be blessed, and may you be like those that are fruitful in Israel. Okay, 13, let's see how this goes down.
So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife, and he went into her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son.
How about that? So there you go. So, bam, one verse, they're married, they're consummated, they got kids. It's so funny, like, right? That's the whole wedding in one verse. And God enables her to conceive, so God has shut down her womb, and now it is opened up. Okay, keep going to 14.
Then the woman said to Naomi, blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loved you, who is more to you than seven sons, has given birth to him. Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse.
How about that? So Naomi gets to see a grandkid after all these years. So this bitter, pained woman now at the end of the season of life gets to be a caretaker for a newborn kid. So what a delight to her.
Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her, and the woman of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, a son has been born to Naomi, and named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David.
That's King David. Okay, keep reading. 18, watch this.
These are the generations of Perez. Perez fathered Hezron. Hezron fathered Ram. Ram fathered Amminadab. Amminadab fathered Nashon, and Nashon fathered Salmon. Salmon fathered Boaz. Boaz fathered Obed. Obed fathered Jesse, and Jesse fathered David.
Okay, now if we fast forward that line, where does that end up?
Jesus.
Are you freaking kidding me? Ruth, a Moabite prostitute, whatever, gets to be in the line of Jesus Christ? Are you kidding me? Right? That's how the story ends. So welcome to why they would have mentioned Tamar and that Perez and that crazy story in 4 verse 12, right? So here's the woman that now gets to be a part of the lineage of Jesus Christ, right? Fascinating end and a beautiful love story brought to conclusion as God enables her to conceive. Naomi gets a grandkid. Obed, who's now Jesse's pops, who's the father of David, the greatest king that Israel has ever known, who now is going to be the line of the Messiah. So, woo-hoo! Yes, sir. I don't think so. Yeah.
Was Rahab.
Really? Yeah. I don't know. Huh. I never looked at that. What's it say? Huh. Maybe. There you go. Make a lot of sense. All the crazy, weird. Yeah. So.
Jesus comes from crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, we're in the Judges, so we're on the heels of 1 Sam. We're right there, so that would make, I guess it would make sense contextually. But yeah, like, welcome to the, like, when you read Jesus' lineage, it's like, it's scandalous, right? So you read these genealogies, and most of us are like, blah, the father, blah, blah, and it's just, but knowing the backstory, the people that God chose to include, it's like, it's insane, some of the characters in there, right? Murderers and thieves and adulterers and prostitutes and just, you know, Moabites. It's insane. So be encouraged. So there you go, my friends. That is the greatest love story in your Bible. Maybe Song of Solomon is a close second. Maybe a first second to that. Who knows? But this is a pretty neat story. So hope you guys enjoyed it, and we will get into 1 Samuel and watch the last judge in the book of Judges rule, and then on into the kings. All right? So let me pray. Somebody else pray, and then we will. I've talked enough. So let me pray, and then we will call it a day.
Lord, thank you for today and for just a chance to see in a time during the Judges, Lord, in a time that seems so dark and so not honoring to you, Lord, that we get this story of Ruth that occurred during that time. Just a great picture of that. No matter times of our day, that you're still in control, Lord, and that there are always going to be those who are honoring to you. Lord, we thank you for your time just in word through this week, and pray that we take what we learned and apply it to our lives. It's in your Son Jesus' name we pray.
Amen. All right, friends. Enjoy your day.